Doctor Is In is a co-production of Ave Maria Radio and EWTN Radio and carried across the EWTN Global Catholic Radio Network.
Tell me what's going on.
I never thought I'd be calling you.
I hope you're going to agree with me.
Well, no, I'm sorry.
I'm not into predictions, but you want me to make a prediction?
But you're a psychologist. Do you have some advice?
I don't know. I'm not going to tell you what to do.
Yeah, I really didn't want to call you about this.
All right, let's answer your question and give you some good news.
Yay.
You're my second favorite Italian person.
You seem like an honest guy.
A lot of people suffer when they have to listen to me. So at least you're getting your daily dose of suffering right now.
Now, from the studios of Living Bread Radio Network in Canton, Ohio, the hometown of Mother Angelica, here's Dr. Ray.
Well, it happened again twice. Happens a lot. I had someone talking to me, telling me the struggles they were having with their child. And a lot of times these are older children, 20, 22, 26. They begin with the litany of what's going on with the child, the negative stuff. And then it is as though they feel compelled. Now, whether this is parental loyalty, whether it is a nod to the pervasive, dominant self-image motif, mindset, zeitgeist in our culture, they say, but he's a good kid. Now, I'm not arguing he's not a good kid. It kind of depends upon how you define good. But I'm fascinated by the idea that most parents, after telling you what their concerns, their complaints, their struggles are with this child, whatever age child, most tell you he's a good kid. It's as though they feel guilty speaking negatively of the child. Doesn't mean you don't like him. Doesn't mean you think he's a bad person. But somehow, some way, they've got to tell you he's a good guy. That happened twice just yesterday. All right, that's a digression. Good to have you with me. This is The Doctor Is In. Monday through Friday, we take your calls. I get a lot of, oh gosh, I don't know, hundreds and hundreds of requests per month from publicity agencies and agents that say, I've got a wonderful guest for you. I got my own guests, and they are you. You're wonderful guests. You call in. You don't need anybody fronting for you. You can just call in, say, here's my situation. Here's my problem. Here's my struggle. Here's my thought. Here's my help for another person. Here is my compliment for you, Dr. Ray. We're not getting too many of those. But every so often, about every 4 or 5 years, we do get one. And then I just replay it. I'd have Andrew just every so often replay it. Same person saying the same thing. And nobody really picks up on it. Hey, you had that guy on saying that stuff before. 877-573-7825. 877-57 equal, the number to call to get Eric Dumont, first line. If Eric is busy, you'll get Andrew Krucek. He's the producer man. He takes care of all the buttons and the knobs and the flashing and the beeps and the lights, all the stuff going on over there at Ave Maria Radio Studios, who produces this in conjunction with the EWTN Global Catholic Radio Network. We are planning, we are in the planning stages to head down to Ave Maria University in Florida. Latter part of May, we're setting it up. I'll give you more details as they unfold. We're going to do 4 tapings of the TV show. So prepare yourselves if you'd like to be part of the audience, because the audience is a huge, huge aspect to the taping of the program. Audience is interactive. They ask questions. They usually are involved in the opening bits that we do. So we'll get you more information on that. I also am planning a very, very, very special book offering on the website. There are, of course, 15 or 16 book options on the website, my website at drray.com. However, I've just been able to arrange for some things that I think will make it very, very helpful and to your benefit to take a look. So I'll give you more details on that. My first book, as I mentioned before on the program, was titled, You're a Better Parent Than You Think. When I was interviewed for that book after it came out, a common question was, how can you say that? Maybe these people are not better parents than they think. Maybe their parenting stinks. So they buy your book, you're just lying to them. Think about it. Who buys parenting books? You're not going to get someone who says, you know, I haven't fed them for a couple of weeks. I'm starting to feel pretty neglectful. Let's go buy a parenting book. You get people buying parenting books who want to be better parents. That is your audience. That's your general group. There's a chapter in the book where I talk about surrendering your authority. Some of the mindsets that parents develop to make them give up their God-given right to be the authority in their home. Now, one of these is he's a special child. And this can run the gamut, not gambit. Gambit is an opening move. Gamut is a continuum. This can run the gamut from he has a diagnosis of oppositional defiant disorder, all the way through to, and this is what I want to talk about today, the loss of a parent through death. I've had clients who have come in with older children, and the kids are giving them fits. It's very, very unpleasant on the home environment. I find out after talking a little bit that mom or dad passed away when the child was 8 or 10 or 12 or 15. The surviving parent, of course, struggled to deal with being a single parent. That was one aspect of it. Sure, certainly there's the exhaustion and the mourning component that definitely can dampen one's resources, resolve, energy level for being a parent. But another factor is he's lost a parent. I can't ask him to dry the dishes too. Or he's lost a parent, so therefore, when he's nasty and disrespectful to me, I have to give him leeway. It's understandable that his mood might not be the best. However well-intentioned that is, it's misguided. It does not help the child. As a matter of fact, as is evidenced by the parents who come to my office in this situation, it has hurt the child. Over time, usually 2, 3, 4, 5, 6 years, when the parent has relaxed their discipline standards, relaxed their expectations, because the child has already been dealt a very unfair blow, if you will, by life, the parent doesn't want to, quote-unquote, add frustrations to the child's existence. So the parent backs way off on holding the child accountable, on having rules, on limiting the child's freedoms. The parent becomes more permissive. This is not how they parented before the spouse died. It's a dramatic alteration afterwards. What happens? The child becomes harder to live with. The child becomes more unpleasant. The parent usually thinks, or asks me anyway, is this because they're still grieving over the loss of their mom or their dad? Not usually. The main factor is now the alteration in the parenting. It's very different now. It's much more permissive. It's much more loose. It's much more tolerant of things it shouldn't be tolerant of. I've seen this example too, when a child in a family tragically commits suicide, maybe an older brother, older sister. The parent becomes so afraid of parenting with a loving firmness, with expectations and standards. They become so afraid that they back way, way off. Now, the danger in that, the misguidance in that, is that they create a situation that makes the child more easily frustrated, more easily angered, more easily upset emotionally, which then raises the chances that the child will do things that will hurt himself, that will take risks. That's the irony of it. If one tries to avoid what happened to a sibling by backing off on their parenting, they actually raise the chances that the same thing could happen again. Now, hopefully it's far removed. But that's a main trap for parents. He's a special child. Life has dealt him an unfair blow. When I was a consultant to Head Start, we had a young four-year-old. Well, that's kind of redundant, isn't it? As opposed to an old four-year-old. We had a four-year-old who was pretty close to completely hearing impaired. Couldn't hear much of anything. The parents felt so bad because he had this particular setback in life that they didn't discipline him. They pretty much allowed him, are you thinking of Helen Keller on this one? They pretty much allowed him to have all his demands met when he wanted them met. We had significant problems with him in Head Start. The other kids did not like him. The other kids didn't want to be around him. He was so feisty, so unruly, so unpleasant, so provocative to the other kids. In essence, they would have much more related to him if he were hearing impaired, as opposed to hearing impaired plus major discipline problem. It got to the point where his discipline problem was probably a bigger handicap socially than his hearing problem. But because his parents thought it wouldn't be fair to discipline him, to do anything to hold him accountable for his nasty conduct, because he already can't hear, that they just completely took a hands-off attitude. Yes, kids who have experienced trauma, special circumstances, need a lot of love, a lot of affection, a lot of being upheld in their parents' eyes. But what they don't need is for the parents to completely alter their parenting approach because life has already been unfair to this child. 877-573-7825, 877-57-EQUAL. I would like to talk to you if you would like to talk to me. But you don't even have to like to talk to me. Just call.
So you listen to me and you listen well. Pick up the phone and start dialing. I want you to deal with your problems.
Don't let everyone else get all the great advice.
Call now to speak with Dr. Ray.
Solidarity HealthShare began out of the Christian tradition of neighbor helping neighbor. They're a nonprofit medical cost-sharing ministry in which their members share in each other's eligible medical expenses. Solidarity HealthShare is not insurance, but rather an alternative way to pay for medical costs that adheres to the teachings of the Catholic Church. They'll never share in a medical care that goes against their values and morals, such as abortion, contraception, and sterilization. More information available at SolidarityHealthShare.org or at 844-313-4999.
Brought to you by the nonprofit Seton Home Study.
Hi, everybody. Dr. Ray Guarendi here. You thinking about homeschooling? Seton Homeschooling, 35 years of experience, pre-K through high school. They provide the books, the lesson plans, the counselors, the grading services, the tests. That's right. Well, my wife used Seton, some of our children. And I will tell you this, two of them got perfect ACT scores in verbal. And overall, the Seton students scored more than 100 points above average on the SAT, 27% higher on English and reading. It is a rigorous program. At least now, 1.3 million students are homeschooled. You want to give the very best to your kids? Trust me on this one. Go with Seton. It is a beautifully rigorous academic program. Go to SetonHome.org. SetonHome.org.
Do you own popular index mutual funds or ETFs? If so, you're automatically owned shares of companies that conflict with your moral beliefs. Ave Maria Mutual Funds are managed to conform to pro-life and pro-family values. Long-term investors can invest in the no-load Ave Maria Mutual Funds. The experienced professional portfolio managers make decisions based on investment fundamentals and pro-life values. You can learn more about Ave Maria Mutual Funds today at 866-AVE-MARIA or visit AveMariaFunds.com.
Thanks for joining me. Ray Grandy here. You've no doubt been familiar with the sitcom, big in the 90s. Everybody loves Raymond. Well, this is our Catholic media counterpart. Some people sort of tolerate Raymond. I am Raymond Grandy. Let's go to Eddie. Eddie is a pa. That's what it says there. Eddie is pa. Oh, that's Pennsylvania. I'm sorry. I just thought he was remarking that he was a father. Hi, Eddie.
Hi, Dr. Ray. How are you?
Well, I'm feeling pretty good today.
I got to give you credit. I give you a gold star, four gold stars for doing what you do.
Hey, Eddie, they pay me.
Yeah, you get your big silver star, gold stars. My question is, I know, like you actually mentioned Helen Keller, but I deal with a lot of people that are addictive habits. I deal with a lot of people that are very hardened type people, criminals, stuff like that, street people. What's our best approach to them? I always just take a gentle approach, but trying to get, you know, to be of God and give them the information of Jesus, and then, you know, hopefully, you know, it'll change their lives, make their lives better, you know, especially people on the street, you know.
You a counselor, Eddie?
I have a degree in psychology, Ray, Tucker.
So what context do you deal with these hardened folks?
I usually am very gentle with them, and I try to tell them about Jesus, and I tell them if they're violent that maybe that's not the best way.
No, I mean, how do you come across so many of them?
It's kind of hard to hear you, Doctor. I'm usually just real nice, and I usually give them some money because they're usually broke.
I'm not making myself too clear, Eddie. You said that you are around an awful lot of folks who have had rough lives, perhaps been in prison, perhaps addictions. And you're not a counselor. Are these friends of yours? Are these people that you meet in various social contexts?
And here it's easy to, you know, the people are pretty friendly, okay? They say they aren't, but they are. Sitting there on the sidewalk, you know, I'll drop a dollar on them, you know. And most of them are real nice, you know. But when you talk to them privately, you find out about their past, you know what I mean? Usually they'll bring it up.
Well, and I would suggest to you, Eddie, that you don't talk to them if you don't want to hear negative. If you don't mind hearing negative, then you listen and you offer whatever you can offer, but I wouldn't get pulled into too much on a very shallow basis like that. You're helping someone who perhaps is on the street, who is asking for money. Okay, so you give them some money and you ask about them and they tell you, and pretty soon you hear a long trail of how they got there.
Right.
Okay. So unless if you're not going to stop that. That's you're not going to say, tell me something good. You're going to have to brace yourself and decide when to say something and how to say it. Some people tell me, I've had folks tell me, they say something as straightforward as, God loves you. Kind of interrupts a tale of woe.
I do that.
God loves you. I'll pray for you. That kind of thing. So at that point, Ed, it sounds like you just more or less want to connect a little bit, even if on a superficial level, with some people that you come across. While as you move through your life, they're either on the street or they're somewhere. Maybe you're taking part in some charitable organization. You serve meals or something along those lines. And so you come across a lot of folks who have had hard times.
Yeah.
And When they tell you about their hard times, it brings you down.
It can, because it seems like after the 15th time of the same story and the same reaction.
Well, sure.
Well, like Billy, he always has the same story, how he was hit by a train, and I've known him for like 10 years, and he's still telling me about how he got hit by a train, you know?
You could say, Billy, Billy, yeah. I've heard the story. Let's talk about something else. You can say that. Of course, again, see, I don't know what Billy's mental health history is. Who knows if there's brain involvement? Who knows if he's had a mental disorder? Who knows why he repeats himself? I don't know. I don't know Billy. I guess what I would say is, Eddie, just recognize that if you're going to have these kinds of interchanges with people that are down on their luck, if you want to put it that way, you're going to hear a lot of tales of woe. Be careful about commiserating with those folks. Maybe you have five or six pat phrases that you use to interrupt and say, well, I just wanted to talk with you. I just wanted to see how you're doing right now.
Yeah.
Eddie, thank you for the call, my friend. I will talk to you. See, the difference between me and Eddie is I hear a lot of tales of woe, too, from clients. But I hear them over periods of time. So an hour, two, three, five, six, 9 hours, you get to understand a little bit how this all came about. And hopefully you can add something to break the cycle. Anonymous caller from Texas. And I believe this caller, and I think it's Mom, was on the line in a previous show. Is that true, Mom?
That's Dad.
It's Dad. Okay. So I blew that one. Hi, Dad.
Hey, I'll forgive you. It's all right.
Let it go. I know. I know it. I should have realized it was Dad because it said anonymous as opposed to anonyma, which was the feminine. Okie dokie. You got an 8-year-old who's just deciding schoolwork's not for him.
Certain assignments. He'll complete 2 out of 4 sentences at school for certain, like, writing. Besides taking things away or privileges away, what else can I do?
Well, you're not going to take the privileges away. What you're going to do is not give them until you have evidence that he's completed his assignments. In other words, the rule is, I need proof that you've done what you've been asked to do, assuming it's within your ability, and it most likely is. I need proof that you've done this. You show me. And until I have that proof, I don't take anything away. I don't give it. Are you having trouble monitoring what he does?
Not at home, but at school.
Does the work come home?
Sometimes.
So you don't know what he has to do all the time. He tells you, but you really don't know if he's being straight.
I think he's being straight. I occasionally get, I don't know, which that answer means.
Which
know,
means
no.
He's not being straight.
But,
yeah.
Well, true. But
okay.
We'll get the occasional saying, from the teacher saying, he didn't complain all of it, but he definitely gets it. So there's not a lack of confidence there. It's just a lack of follow through. He's very, very concerned about other people.
This is the number one school problem. I was in the schools for about 10 or 12 years, consulted to 12 districts. This was the number one school problem. It was underachievement. It was not working up to potential. It was not completing assignments. I'm going to get cut off by a hard break. Dad, stay right there because there is a lot to unpack at the base of all this, and I want to give you some suggestions. 877-573-7825. 877-57-EQUAL. That's the number I'd like to hear from you. Keep in mind, anytime you call during the show, you have a pretty close to equal chance of getting on.
EWTN Radio for the reason that Mother Angelica founded this entire enterprise. She always saw this as a spiritual growth network. It was to be an enterprise in media that reached people in all aspects of their life. She saw this as a holistic approach to reaching the whole person in the middle of the world and bringing them truth and life.
Raymond Arroyo thinks Catholic radio is important. So should you.
Father Benedict Groeschel.
I want to welcome you, if you're not familiar, with the wonderful world of the gifts of the Holy Spirit. What will America become if it makes it impossible for the Holy Spirit to work here because of untruth and self-indulgence and paganism? This is not just a nice discussion of the gifts of the Holy Spirit, because I'm going to discuss what happens when people make it impossible to be prudent, just, or honest, or brave, or courageous, or reverent. When people make that impossible, what a terrible thing they do not only to themselves, but to our society.
EWTN. Live truth. Live Catholic.
How can we have faith and be transformed by the gospel? What part can we play in recreating the world for God's good plan? Once we understand that the gospel is not merely good news, but explosive, life-changing news, our life will never be the same. In Father John Ricardo's new book, Rescued, The Unexpected and Extraordinary News of the Gospel, he helps us to see the world through the lenses of God, with a clear vision of the plot and the outcome of the story that we're living through. You can get Rescued and Father John's other great books on the store page at AveMariaRadio.net.
It's a good thing I have a strong self-image. I was talking to my producer man, Andrew Krucek, in between the break. We got to connect on certain items of business on the program. And I heard Eric screening a call. And our caller was asking some questions. And Eric's response was, and I don't know what the context was, but he said, "No, I didn't really listen to his monologue." Now, when you got your call screamer not even interested in you, it can ding up your self-image. Fortunately, I got self-image to spare, so I'm still okay. I'm talking to a dad from Texas, has an 8-year-old. I don't like the sounds of this only in the sense that it tends to get worse if it is not directly dealt with. Dad, you still there?
I am.
Okay. What's happening is your little guy has abilities. Sounds like the teacher says he gets it, he's smart, so therefore, he or she, the teacher, is not worried so much about the fact that he's just not regular in completing his assignments. Is that correct?
Yeah, that sounds about right.
Okay. Now, let's look at this a couple ways. One, you don't know what assignments he doesn't complete. You ask him, you think he's leveling with you, but sometimes you get an I don't know, which is a way of saying I'm not going to tell you. So what I would suggest is if she's willing or he's willing, whatever the teacher's gender is, ask this teacher to, if they will, to write down what assignments he doesn't complete. And then he will bring them home, and he will complete them before he has any privileges whatsoever. If you want to add a little extra oomph to it, I might have a couple of assignment books at home. Maybe she'll give them to you. And tell him that if he doesn't complete it at school, he's going to complete it at home along with a few extra assignments you're going to give him. Now, I guarantee you, if you do that, this young man will complete his assignments at school. Right now, he's just probing for cracks in the system. And he's somewhat successful at it. But the problem, Dad, is that he will get better at it. It almost always goes in that direction.
He's 8 years old. Is he second or third grade?
First.
Oh, he's first. He was held back?
Yep.
And he was held back because of maturity, because of birthday, because of not finishing what he was asked? What was the reason?
Maturity.
Okay. So because of that maturity, there could be some problems in paying attention, could be some problems in picking up the learning quick enough. Is that still going on as you see it?
No. Repeating the second year of kindergarten, he really did well. I mean, he knew what he was supposed to do. In fact, he got things done ahead of time. So he can do the work.
Okay.
And
he's
still... We've seen him do the work at home. He's brought it home. He can do it. It's just, it's a lack of, you know, oh, so-and-so needs help. Or so-and-so's off task, so I'm going to help them get on task.
Well, that's not, Dad, that's not his concern. And that may be well-intended. Yeah, that may be well-intended. And I'm sure you've told him a million times that he doesn't need to do that. His priority is to finish his assignments. But that isn't registering. The only way to make it register is he's going to have to see that it's to his benefit, his best interests, to complete the work at school. And the only way you're going to know that is you're going to have to know every day what assignments he didn't complete. That's that straightforward. Most first grade teachers will do that for you. They'll send home a little pad with the assignments that he needs to complete. Now, one final warning. He may start to lose the pad. Oh, I forgot. I left it in my desk. Which means, you know, there's a good likelihood that he just didn't want you to see the pad because it had too many assignments on it that he'd have to do at home before he gets privileges. So I would say that if you want to offset that possibility, the rule is this. Without the pad and without the necessary books, assignment sheets, there are no privileges. None. So the pad...
Quick follow-up.
Yeah.
So school has email. I can easily get this via email from the teacher.
Okay.
Would it be more important for him to bring the pad home to build that trust and that maturity? Or would it be better just to simply negate that and just get it from the teacher?
That's a good question. I think it would come down to what's best for the teacher. If she says... It's just easier for me to let you know via email. You can say, okay, that's all I need to know. I'll make sure he completes it. And you know what you might tell him? You might tell him that if, in fact, these assignments could easily have been completed at school, they will be completed at home and he will have an early bedtime. Or they will be completed at home and there will be no computer time. Add something to it. To say, okay, we'd like you to have the self-discipline to finish this in a timely manner, but if you realize that all you have to do is putz around at school, come home, and finish your assignments in 12 minutes, that is sort of defeating our purpose. So at that point, I would say, okay, if it's clear to me from your teacher that you could have easily gotten this done at school, you just chose to do it at home, I'm going to add to it. And I think that's why it's great to have a book of assignments or anything like that that you can add to what he does. I deal with this in great detail in my book, Discipline That Lasts a Lifetime. There's a couple whole segments on what do you do when a kid is not completing his schoolwork in a timely manner. Thank you, Dad. Thank you so much for the call. All right. Soon we're going to, I can't say what? Manner? Oh, that's right. You're right. Manner. Personer, peopler, whatever. I'm looking at the clock here, and I'm looking at what, Andrew, about a minute. I don't exactly have the second clock on this particular minute and 10. Well, I'm going to go to Teresa, but I would also like to hear from you after the break, 877 573-7825 is the number, 877-57-EQUAL. Good to have you. Okay, items of business, just a few. Just real quick, ball season, and this is true. There was a breeze came up. The orchestra was giving an open air. They were outside, rendition of Schubert's Ninth Symphony. Now, during the intermission, most of the musicians had to tie down their music to the stands because they would have blown away. The bass players, however, went nearby for a few fast drinks. Well, they stayed too long. When the conductor returned to the podium, ready to conduct, he found it was the last half of the ninth. The scores were tied, and the bases were loaded.
Father Benedict Groeschel.
I'm going to tell you about the most abused woman I ever met in my life. You know her name as Roe, as in Roe versus Wade. I talked to Roe. This woman is a great penitent. This woman is a humble person who was deeply hurt. She was kneeling in the Basilica of the Immaculate Conception, the National Shrine in Washington, when I met her. And I thought, what reverence. I didn't know who this woman was, but she was praying with reverence, with great fervor. And I asked a priest friend of mine, who is that? And he says, oh, that's Roe. God is not mocked. This woman was abused by those who propagate the killing of children.
EWTN. Live truth. Live Catholic.
I'm Dr. Stan Williams, and this is The Logic of Catholicism. Solanus Casey said, appreciation is as necessary for social order and harmony as are the laws of gravity for the physical world. Have you ever appreciated what you can't not know? What is it that you know without thinking and take on faith? You know, for instance, that you have to breathe, but normally you don't think about it. Stick out your thumb. Look at it. Without it, you could not pick up a pencil. You can't not know that you have breath or thumbs, and yet you have to think to pick up that pencil. Are you holding your breath? Do you think it's time to breathe? Today, go on social media and tell someone you appreciate breath and thumbs. And that's the logic of Catholicism. Explore more at AveMariaRadio.net. Under resources, look for me, Dr. Stan Williams.
Thank you for joining me on The Doctor Is In. I'm Dr. Ray Guarendi. Teresa is calling from Long Island, New York. Hi, Teresa.
Hi, how are you?
I am fine. How much does she hate you?
She hates me a lot.
Like, no talking do you hate?
Yeah. She, you know, like, we're on a break right now. And when she decides that she doesn't want to see me, she doesn't let me see her kids. And I can't call her. I can't text her. And she's got a lot of physical and mental problems. I fear for her death. And I dream about them every night. I worry about her night and day. I worry about the kids living in such a violent environment because she has these violent tantrums at every little thing. You know, for example, she was staying with me for a couple of weeks, and she left because she couldn't stand staying with me because I was making her life miserable. But I wasn't really doing anything. And one of the tantrums she had was because I didn't give her notification that the cleaning people were coming, and they surprised her, and she had like a tantrum right in front of her. I mean, it's, there's nothing I can do, but I cry for them every day, and this all started when her freshman year of college, when we got divorced, And even my son that year, who used to be a homebody, became, you know, went out and started drinking. And now he kind of has a drinking problem, I think, but he doesn't think so. And, you know, she, away in college, started doing, you know, all sorts of drugs, and she was prescribed Adderall. She's down to 92 pounds. She's suffers from postpartum thyroiditis. She's married with two kids.
So there is a husband.
She got pregnant right out of college.
There is a husband.
There is an ex-husband, okay, and a present husband. Right. The ex-husband is her and her my son's father. I also have an older son from a previous marriage, but and their father used to physically abuse him, and they used to tell me that
Teresa,
they wanted
how old is
us
she?
To get divorced.
How old is she? How old is your daughter?
She's now 27. She'll be 28 in a few months.
And this has been going on for several years, correct?
Ten years.
Okay. So this all started when she just basically left high school and went on to college.
Right.
So she often
was the exact same time that I got divorced.
Okay. She often on allows you somewhat in her life, and then other times just says, no, I'm mad at you, get away from me, and that could go months, right?
Right, and you can't see my kids.
Okay. That's the big club.
Who are very, very attached to me.
Okay. If you're asking me, how do I make my adult daughter not be like this, I have no answer for you.
No, I was just asking you for permission to feel guilty and blame myself.
No, I'm not giving you permission to do that.
Well, because it all happened when I got divorced, so I can't tell.
It was coincidental with your divorce.
Well, how do we know that, though?
Well, you don't. So what you've chosen to do is to say, okay, because of the divorce, this is what happened. But you also had another big thing happen. They went to college. And your story of kids going off the rails after going away to college is repeated by the hundreds of thousands, if not millions, in this culture. So I'm not sitting here saying, oh, no, you had every right to divorce. I don't know that, Teresa. I have no idea. However, it does sound like that for whatever the reason, whether it was 50% of the divorce or 50% of college, they just kind of went off the rails, both of them. Mm-hmm. And she right now is piling one bad move on top of another bad move.
Mm-hmm.
The best thing I think for you to do is to back away when she says to back away. I wouldn't push myself back on the situation. I would recognize that whatever happened, as you believe, to get this in motion. And by the way, I know I'm going to say this, and I don't think I'm going to be wrong. If you tell me I'm wrong, I'll acknowledge it. I don't think your daughter went from age 18 and did a 180-degree turnabout because prior to that she was a sweetheart who was easy to raise and very loving and very caring and very religious. I suspect
she wasn't religious.
She wasn't?
No.
Right. I suspect this stuff was happening before the divorce. It was gaining momentum. Am I wrong?
I don't think so, no. Okay. I think, because her senior year, she really partied a lot.
Okie dokie. So, in fact, this is just a continuation of stuff that had been building even prior to your divorce.
Yes, and I don't rapidly deteriorating.
Right. Well, that's because she got free and independent, and she could make her own foolish decisions out from under your eyes. I don't know, and you don't have to comment on what your marriage was like, on what your ex-husband was like. I suppose that was probably part of the problem too. So, given
it was very toxic.
Okay, so given all that, you had a lot of ingredients that when these kids got free, they were going to head into a culture that allows you to make all kinds of self-destructive decisions, and that's what she's doing. So at this point, if you're asking me, I would have no guilt at this point because whatever bad happened, happened.
I have to just keep praying for that.
Well, that's true. You're going to have to do that. Because at this point, you have no control, none, zero, zip, nada, over what she decides to do in her own life and to punish you. She wants to punish you. You're just a bad person in her eyes.
You're just
so therefore don't even come near my kids.
Because
well, I know these things. Because you ruined me just like you're gonna ruin my kids, and I'm not gonna let that happen. It's probably her attitude.
Yes. Oh my God, do you know her?
I'll tell you, how do I do this?
Sometimes
I even amaze myself. I know. Yeah, but see, here's the thing. It doesn't help you that I know her. What would help you is for me to somehow persuade you to at least get rid of 50% of this guilt and try to live your life in some kind of religious peace, knowing that she's going to mosey back into your life. She always does.
Mm-hmm.
Whether it's because she crashes, whether it's because she needs money, whether it's because she needs you to help with the kids, she's going to mosey back in. And so at that point, my advice would be don't even talk the past. Don't even say, oh, well, for 7 months I didn't hear from you. Now you're back. Nope.
I never do that. I always just act like nothing ever happened.
There you go. You're smart. You're not as dumb as I look. So, so given that, I hope that in this few brief minutes, I at least pushed you in the direction of it's time not to feel rotten about all this.
Yes, you have. I guess I keep needing to be told that as a reminder.
Well,
what everybody tells me, but
you don't listen to any of them. Maybe you'll listen to me. Thank you, dear. I appreciate
will
the
listen
call.
To you.
God bless you. I'll talk to you. This is Dr. Ray.
Doctor?
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 Doctor.
Doctor?
All the advice, none of the bills. Come in. The doctor is in.
I really like to listen to your show. It's a breath of fresh air.
The not-for-profit Catholic Family Conference, Saturday, May 1st, is a vibrant event that will inspire, encourage, and fortify your family life with the truths of the faith. This year's stellar lineup of speakers includes Cardinal George Pell, Bishop Joseph Strickland, Dr. Ralph Martin, and Steve Ray. If you can't be in Irving, Texas, attend online by purchasing the Virtual Family Pass, which includes all masses and speaker sessions. It's the Catholic Family Conference, Saturday, May 1st, where the heart of society begins and ends with family.
We are in conflict with the surrounding culture. What's happened? Well, one thing that's happened is the collapse of Christendom. We can no longer count on the society surrounding us to reinforce or hold up or give sanction to some of the most basic rules by which we live. Richard John Neuhaus, before he became Father Richard John Neuhaus, in his book Naked Public Square, he pointed out that every major social reform in American history was always argued about and fought over in terms of God, Scripture, the Church. And so the Church and religion were the carriers of social reform. We may be at a place where that's no longer the case, given the redefinition of marriage and given the non-religious, anti-religious affiliation of leading homosexual activists.
Cresta in the Afternoon with Al Cresta for Eastern on EWTN Radio.
Do you own popular index mutual funds or ETFs? If so, you're automatically owned shares of companies that conflict with your moral beliefs. Ave Maria mutual funds are managed to conform to pro-life and pro-family values. Long-term investors can invest in the no-load Ave Maria mutual funds. The experienced professional portfolio managers make decisions based on investment fundamentals and pro-life values. You can learn more about Ave Maria mutual funds today at 866-AVE-MARIA or visit AveMariaFunds.com.
This next situation is going to come up, perhaps more and more. And it's going to put parents in situations just like Christine's. Hi, Christine. How are you?
I'm okay.
I would be, I would not be settled with this. Your school system has decided that any child who declares themselves transgender is allowed to use the sex of the locker room and bathroom that they choose, right?
Yeah, du jour. Bathroom du jour, what you feel like that day.
Have any other parents been unsettled and raised reservations with the administration about this?
Well, yes, sort of. the thing is, it sort of went under the radar. I just found out about it through a teacher friend of ours that told me that you no longer have the parental authority to not allow your child to change his or her name at the school. And then that led me down to the path, and I ended up finding out that, oh my gosh, this regulation was passed in October 2020 and nothing went out. There was no big email or, hey, you know, look at, we got this new regulation. So it's kind of,
wait a minute,
scary.
Christine, let me jump in here a second. I'm confused. You said you no longer have the parental right to have your child change their name? That's what you said.
Yeah,
change their
children
name.
That are 18 in the high school, can change their name on their transcript. A boy can change to a girl and vice versa. And the parent, they don't have to ask the parent for consent. This is high school, seniors, obviously. So that's just part of it. The other part is, and I'll try to be brief, it's amazing. Like, I'm just shocked that this is even passed. And so anyway, the boy or the girl can go into the opposite sex, and they're calling it sex assigned at birth. Sorry. But they can go into the opposite sex bathroom. They can go into the opposite sex locker room. They're even allowing these children to cohabitate on field trips that require overnights. And the teachers have no authority to question the child. They can't say anything. And also, it's the sports teams. I forgot the sports teams, but that's sort of a side thing. So, and then it's a fluid policy. And I checked with the principal and I said, so what about opportunists here? Because I think that's why I'm calling you. And
sure.
I got,
and there will be those. School. There will be those.
Yes, but I think I'm really looking for, there will be. The high school principal said basically it's going to wait and see if something, it's a knee jerk. If something happens, we'll take care of it. There's no proactive there. I know that's really not what I'm calling about. Well, I feel helpless and hopeless because I got two kids in the high school.
You are helpless.
And,
bottom
and
line is
Catholic.
This. I'm going to have to let me jump in because you're going to get cut off by the clock.
Okay.
This is a public school system, correct?
Correct.
And this is across all of their high schools. If a child turns 18 and decides, all right, I want to change my name. Now, legally, you have to go through legal processes to officially change your name. So that's the first thing. That's one hurdle. But the second thing is, if that 18-year-old says, yeah, I've decided that I'm not the gender of a male, I'm a gender of a female, and I'm going into the girls' locker room. Now, they have had no upheaval because of this so far. No one has done that.
You know, I don't think enough parents really know about it. It didn't go out as a memo.
Well, the kids wouldn't tell them? You're not going to get some 15-year-old freshman girl saying, hey, Mom, there was a guy in here who was every bit a guy in every way, and he says that he identifies as a woman, and he's in our locker room?
I think because of COVID, Dr. Ray, we don't have the full effect. It's going to hit in September when they're all back. Virtual. I mean, non-virtual.
Okay. So in other words, you haven't, the kids haven't been in school.
Yeah, they really haven't. We
just okay.
Back
all right. All right. That's a big,
March,
that's a,
actually.
Well, then they have been in school.
Yeah. Just 2 days a week.
And so far, no one has ventured across the opposite sex bathrooms, locker rooms.
I don't know. I don't know.
What do your kids tell you?
My kids out till the end of the year.
Okay. All right. So they don't know. What do they tell you about it? What would they say? Mom, I don't want any part of this.
Well, one of them will roll her eyes because they get indoctrinated, right? I've tried.
So in other words, Mom, what's the big deal?
In other words, don't, Mom.
Don't make waves, Mom. Don't make waves, Mom. You'll make me really look bad and intolerant, right? That's her attitude.
Yeah. And they're people too, Mom. You know, that kind of thing. Like, they can choose whatever they want. You know,
I think the school is going to have some backlash from parents. And I think you as a parent will have to decide what you're going to do about it. Whether you go to a school board, whether you get other parents who think like you, who are not aware of this, to talk to the school people, see their policy, see if they recognize that the policy, with its all good intentions, could be misused, could be easily misused. And anybody who thinks it wouldn't does not know teenagers. So given that, I think you're right. You're going to have to decide over the summer how, in fact. And I think with your daughter, you might want to say to her, so you have no problems with an 18-year-old walking in while you're taking a shower and being there, and just because he says he's a female. I would ask your daughter to explain her thinking on this. Christine, you may take the action that a parent wants to take. You're permitted. Walk with God. Hold him tightly. Hold on to his hand. Need it.
For information on Dr. Ray's presentations, books, and CDs, visit DRRay.com and follow him on Facebook. The Doctor Is In is a co-production of Ave Maria Radio and EWTN Radio, and carried across the EWTN Global Catholic Radio Network.